It is a great pleasure to welcome to Best Ideas 2023, returning MOI Global instructor Amit Wadawani, portfolio manager and co-founding partner at Moiris Capital Management, and the founding manager of the Moiris Worldwide Value Fund. Amit has more than 30 years of experience researching and analyzing investment opportunities in developed, emerging, and frontier markets, and has managed global investment portfolios since 1996. Prior to founding Moiris, he was a portfolio manager and partner at Third Avenue Management. He founded the international business at Third Avenue and was the founding manager of the Third Avenue Global Value Fund, the Third Avenue Emerging Markets Fund, and the Third Avenue International Value Fund. Amit has an MBA in finance from the University of Chicago and also holds a BA with honors and an MA in economics from Concordia University. He also has a BS degrees in chemical engineering and mathematics from the University of Minnesota. Amit, always a great pleasure to have you with us. I truly enjoy your presentations, and I know they've been of great value to the MOI Global community. I very much look forward to what you have in store for us today and would now like to turn it to you. Please go ahead.
Thank you, John, for your very kind introduction. Welcome to all of those who are listening at the present time or are joining us at a later date. I hope all of you and yours are keeping safe and doing well, and the year 2023 has started well for all of you. Let me turn to the disclaimer page. What I would like to do is emphasize an item which appears in the very last sentence of last paragraph. The following information is not being provided in fiduciary capacity and is not intended to be, it should not be considered as impartial investment advice, which is another way of saying these are my opinions. And of course, they could totally be grossly wrong. So please consider yourself forewarned. Okay, so that's a major, major caveat. So before I get to the idea at hand, let me say a few words for those who are unfamiliar how we at Moiris pick securities, in particular, what constitutes attractive opportunities when viewed through our lenses as disciplined value investors. Now, here's the next slide, which sort of tries to lay out in very sort of point form our investment approach. Summarizing the contents of the slide, we are opportunistic investors who endeavor to buy individual stocks as representing a part of a business at a valuation below what an acquirer would be willing to pay for the same entity in its entirety in a cash transaction. Obviously, to find things that are cheap, it requires us to be opportunistic, price sensitive, and willing to buy when others are not. That is during periods of market dislocations. One of the distinctive features of our approach in security selection is how we approach the valuation of a security. Unlike others, we are skeptical of our ability to forecast earnings with an accuracy enough to risk our clients and our own money on it. So given that we are long-term investors, we would obviously have to forecast earnings 5 years or more into the future, which is an even more daunting task. So very simply, the way we approach the problem is quite differently. What would a security be worth if you were to sell off the assets and businesses, pay off the encumbrances, and distribute the remainder to the shareholders? So you make sure that the valuation of the assets was done using conservative assumptions, rooted in the here and now, and the methodology was similarly conservative in nature. This is what we call our asset-based approach to investing. There's a whole bunch more of this on our website, www.moiriscap.com, and you can read various of the things we've written about it and how we approach valuation, how we approach security selection, how we approach risk. Now, there are a couple of important qualifiers to what I've just said. Typically, such severely discounted valuations, as I mentioned, are found during periods of dislocations, periods of adversity. And so for value to be recognized or surfaced, such adversity must pass. And the company should emerge from this largely unscathed. This requires a very careful assessment of the risks associated with the business to ensure that the company will survive, I mean, ideally, preferably thrive, through this period of adversity. So the second caveat here, the second qualifier in this investment approach is it requires time. It requires time for these factors affecting the business and depressing the stock price to abate. In essence, this investment approach necessitates long-term investment horizons. I know that this is almost anachronistic in this day and age of high turnover investing, but this too should underline the importance of a good financial position and the survivability of the company, given that we're going to own it for long periods of time. Historically, we've owned companies over the long years. Most of our holdings have been something between 3 to 5 years, usually 6 years. I mean, that's roughly the kind of turnover that we have, about 15% turnover over long periods of time in the portfolios that I've managed. The investment in question that I'm going to talk about today, it's a Brazil-listed stock. It's actually also New York Stock Exchange listed, but I'll the details on that in a moment. This is a company that owns or controls three distinct entities. Effectively, I suppose you could call it a holding company, or let us call it a holdco for short. Let me first say a few words about holdcos and their attractions to our kind of analysis. So the holdco is ownership structure, one or more businesses, which could include disparate and usually separate entities. And that is exactly the nature of the company I'm going to be speaking about. To my mind, one of the potential attractions of holdcos is their ownership of multiple standalone assets or businesses. These separate businesses can be grown or developed separately, and their values realized independently and opportunistically. This manner of value crystallization can typically offer multiple sources of value generation for shareholders. You know, for example, one of the big ones here is Berkshire Hathaway, but there's a whole bunch of other ones. Now, what kinds of characteristics does one look for in a holdco? I mean, let me note a couple of these things on this slide. First of all, are the underlying companies attractive investments in their own right? That is to say, would you actually want to own these things? In addition, obviously, does the holdco trade at an attractive discount if you value the constituent holdings conservatively? Those are two very, very important things. And of course, are the holdings financially and operationally strong enough to cope with adversity? And is the holding company also strongly capitalized? So one other thing I should flag as a last item. Remember, there's usually, not usually, but often, most cases, there is a dominant shareholder. Is one comfortable as to the stewardship of the assets that they're overseeing? So these are sort of important characteristics for a holdco, which we sort of my quick sort of mental checklist when I look at holdcos in terms of investing them. So now let me give you a high-level overview of the investment idea that I'm going to talk about today. The company is called Companhia Brasileira de Distribuição. Let's call it CBD. There's a big mouthful right there. Now, CBD is listed on the New York Stock Exchange under CBD. It is also listed in Brazil in the local market, which is known as B3, on the symbol PCAR3. CBD operates principally in the food and non-food retail businesses. So at the aggregated level, these include supermarkets, hypermarkets, electronics, household appliance stores, cash and carry, wholesale and retail, e-commerce operations, and associated distribution networks. Disaggregate this and you will see a slightly different picture emerge, as I will put on the next slide. Now, this is what CBD looks like if you sort of look at its constituent pieces. There really are three pieces here. One, of course, there's GPA, which it owns 100% of. There's Grupo Éxito, which it owns 96.5% of. And Cnova, which CBD owns 33.9%. Okay, so let's sort of give you a flavor of what these three businesses do. Again, these are three distinct businesses. It's a very simple, stylized chart showing this thing. First of all, the 100% owned GPA, which is Grupo Pão de Açúcar, which is actually almost synonymous with CBD because for a while, it was the principal and the sole entity contained within CBD. It is among the largest single food-centric retailers in Brazil. Its principal segments, I mean, these are not all, but these are the principal ones, Pão de Açúcar, which is a collection of premium supermarkets across Brazil, primarily in urban areas. Roughly about a third of these are in the São Paulo area, which is, of course, the most affluent area, the highest income, and of course, the greatest spending power exists over there. The second sort of group of stores as format is proximity. So which in addition to the larger ones, these that I mentioned, the GPAs, the Pão de Açúcar stores, these are smaller neighborhood convenience stores, typically about 250 square meters. And basically they are head-on competition to the mom and pop neighborhood stores. Then of course, there are a bunch of gas stations across the country. They have a bunch of drug stores. They also have some large format stores, which they have been gradually getting rid of. So GPA has been exiting their brand called Extra Hiper. It's a hypermarket, and they've been selling them to Assaí, which is converting them to the cash and carry format. Now, in the short term, this transaction of selling these Extra Hiper hypermarkets is going to reduce GPA's growth rate. There's no question about that. What it also does, it brings in much needed cash to GPA to reinvest and expand its core brands, notably Pão de Açúcar. The market has viewed the sale of Extra Hiper to Assaí very dimly. In fact, you know, every time they sold these stores, of course, the belief was that the GPA was going ex growth and the shares of CBD would sell down, which I believe is one of the reasons why the current present opportunity has presented itself. The second entry here in this organizational chart is Grupo Éxito. Grupo Éxito became a 96.5% owned part of CBD when there was the CBD bid for it in November 2019. Éxito is by far the largest multi-format food retailer in Colombia and Uruguay. It's a sizable operation in Argentina. They have a number of different formats. I mean, they're large cash and carry stores to regular sized stores to small neighborhood convenience stores. It is also largest mall operator in Colombia. And it's also the joint owner of a very sizable retail real estate portfolio. It has significant presence in digital scales, which have actually risen to about 12% of its total sales as of 9 months, 2022. And it commands roughly 22% of market share of the gross market value of non-food sales as well. To give you a sense of market share as a percentage of sales, it has 75% of the food retail sales in Colombia, 17% in Uruguay, and 8% in Argentina. These are pretty large shares. And of course, you could ask, so what else is left to do? You're at 75% of the sales in the market in Colombia. What do you do? Well, Colombia is still actually growing. And the growing is coming from a number of different sources. There's digital initiatives, which, of course, they're growing quite rapidly. There's new formats, for example, fresh produce, on-site baked goods, fresh cut meats, along with the expanding use of private labels. A portion of the share gains are coming from mom and pop stores, and the rapid expansion of the last mile convenience delivery service in conjunction with Rappi, which is a very large Latin American delivery company, well, including sort of Rappi within like a 10-minute delivery in certain geographic areas, has helped it expand its share of the Colombian market. And that continues to date, even now, especially as they emerge from the pandemic, when, of course, people got quite addicted to home delivery. Now, the third part is Cnova, which is kind of a different animal entirely. It's a French e-commerce company. It began as an online retailer and has been shifting its business model over the past several years from being a pure e-retailer to becoming a leading tech e-commerce player. And this is actually the first tech-enabled ecosystem of marketplaces, as they call themselves. As a part of this expansion, the company now offers a wide array of B2B services for online retailers, technology, logistics, marketing, etc. There are really three principal businesses setting aside Cnova. The first one is Cdiscount. Cdiscount is the leading e-commerce sites in France with typically sort of lower priced products. The site has 7% market share amongst e-commerce players in France, which puts it actually second in the country behind Amazon, which has a 19% share. Cdiscount is the leading, is a category leader appliances in France and are number two in PCs, bedding and furniture. The second part of Cnova is Cdiscount advertising. Digital marketing solutions that help brands and marketplace sellers drive sales, strengthen their reputations, and increase the visibility of their products. This division provides a range of services to sellers on digital advertising, both on their marketplace and outside of it. The offering is actually connected with the Cdiscount site, and more customers that Cdiscount and Cdiscount advertising touch, the more valuable services become, as they're able to make decisions based on more and more data. Basically, this is a means of monetizing the data that Cdiscount gathers in the course of its regular business. And the third leg of Cnova is a business called Octopia. And this is kind of a newish business. Octopia is a complete B2B solution that it leverages Cdiscount's experience to create a marketplace ecosystem. Essentially, it's a new business that Cnova is seeking to launch that will insert itself between merchants and marketplace website. Think Amazon and Cdiscount to provide services to both and will be valuable to both of them. Now, Octopia, just to see, give you a sense of where this early startup business has gotten to, it currently has more than 14,000 merchants live on its platform, 2,700 for whom they also do fulfillment of. So if you look at these three holdings, which constitute CBD, GPA is wholly owned, 100%, yep, as the chart shows. It owns 96.5% of Grupo Éxito, which I noted earlier. And Cnova is 33.9% owned by CBD. Now, a further 64.83% of Cnova is held by CBD's parent, Cassini Guichard, and 0.19% is owned by Éxito. So really, while both Éxito and Cnova are listed, there's very, very limited public market floats of each of these companies. There's only 3.5% of Éxito that floats in the marketplace, and 1% of Cnova is floated in the market. So for all intents and purposes, these are really pretty much private companies which happen to have a quote and a listing. I would argue there's really tight ownership of Éxito and Cnova has limited price discovery of these two quasi-private companies in public markets. And I would argue that has been an impediment to CBD attaining fair market valuation. So what is CBD worth anyway? So let's go to the next slide where I outline the valuation for CBD. Now, let's look at it in pieces. First of all, let's look at GPA. GPA has been in the recent past a relatively slow growing business, but with increased investment and reinvestment in the business, you would expect it to actually pick up momentum as the years go by. So the thing is, meanwhile, they've been selling some assets and paying down their debt, specifically the assets sold to Asahi. And so valuing the business, less the net debt plus the receivable from the sale of Hypermarket, the low estimate I use 3x trailing EBITDA, and high estimate I use 4x trailing EBITDA. This is way, way, way less than pretty much most of the other comparable companies, especially in that market as well. But let's just be conservative, value these things very cheaply. Cnova, on the other hand, is currently, as I said, only 1% floats. Now, that said, you have a situation where let's use 50% of market value as a low-end valuation and the high-end market value at, of course, as the high end valuation, the full market valuation. Yep. Now, again, were this to be more liquid, you'd probably see a much better, valuation here. Exito, the low end estimate is the market price as of January 12th. So Exito is roughly at market, the current market valuation is effectively four times trailing 12-month EBITDA. Unlike GPA, Exito is growing much more rapidly. And so I think four times EBITDA is a ludicrously low valuation. I think in great part reflects the fact that A, it's pretty much fallen off everybody's radar screen, given the very limited liability. Obviously, what you know, nobody covers the company, almost nobody covers the company. The limited tradability makes it impossible for people to buy it. And so there's a very limited appetite for it, which is reflected in the really low price. So separately, what we did was we actually did a sort of bottom-up valuation of the components of Exito, the real estate business, different businesses in there, and so forth. And we come up to a much larger number. We come to, seven billion Brazilian reais. So all in, you come to a net asset value of between 8.2 billion reais and 12.4 billion reais for a CBD. Given the divide by the number of shares outstanding, the NAV per share works out to 30.35 at the low end and 46.12 at the high end. The closing price of CBD, this is on Friday, was 18.86%. So you can see there's a pretty hefty discount right there, which is about 37.89% the low end and 59.1% of the high end, which is these are meaningful discount numbers. Now, here's the question we see is that, you have this valuation of 18.86 reais per share. The value per CBD share, the value of the Exito holding for every CBD share is currently 25.96, which is another way of saying you buy CBD, you're getting Exito itself at a discount. You're paying 18.86 per share versus the 25.96 per share worth of Exito, and you're getting GPA and CNova at a negative valuation. Now, you can say, look, holding companies trade at a discount. They always do. And so what's the point here? The discount can persist in infinity and forever. And so there's no reason to assume anything one way or another. But that's really not quite what's happening here. There is something else happening here. And to touch upon exactly what's going on, let me go to the next slide. This is the current configuration of CBD. Okay, see, we call it GPA over here, but really it's CBD, which owns 100% of GPA. So what you have here is Casino, which is the parent company, owns 41% of CBD. CBD, in turn, owns 96.5% of Exito. Okay, so that is the current configuration. Now, Casino, for those, especially those living in Europe, know is a very highly leveraged French company. The problems is it's highly leveraged and needs to raise cash. Why? Because Casino's parent company, Rally, also highly leveraged, is in you'd call it a voluntary reorganization right now. Sauvetage is what the French call it. So just to give you quickly, as I said, Casino is financially leveraged, Rally similarly leveraged, and now Rally is dependent upon distributions from Casino, but it's further removed from the businesses and assets that generate the cash flow, the operating businesses. So to fix this, to get Rally out of Sauvetage, and there's a time limit to this, and the time limit is sometime next year, 2024, Casino has to do a number of transactions to restore its own balance sheet so it can upstream cash to Rally to deleverage Rally's balance sheet. So one of the things that has been talked about, in fact, the ball is very much rolling, is to distribute the shares, or broadly speaking, distribute many of the shares that of Éxito held by CBD to the different shareholders. Note, CBD is 59% owned by outside shareholders and 41% by Casino. Okay, so what will this look post-transaction? Post-transaction, well, Casino will continue to own 41% of GPA, CBD. It will own 34.1% of, so the way the transaction is structured, GPA retains 13.3%. Casino will now own 34.1%, and the others, the outside world, will own 52.6%. So suddenly, the float increases sharply. To increase and improve the tradability, Éxito shares have undergone a 3-for-1 split. Now, so you are going to see a lot, a very large increase in the float of Éxito shares coming, as and when this transaction is concluded. The transaction of, you know, keeping 13.3 at CBD, distributing the remainder on a pro rata basis to the other shareholders. Okay, so what happens? So what is this really happening? Well, there's been a considerable amount of doubt in the marketplace. The company has talked about it. CBD has talked about this, but there's been a considerable amount of doubt. But CBD has continued to persevere in this, and this is where we are in the process. But before that, this is where if this distribution of shares takes place. Remember, as I mentioned at the beginning, at the outset, Éxito is a Colombian company, so it has the bulk of its shares as currently listed. The 3.5% are found in Colombia. However, it has ADRs, and it will in Brazil will have BDRs. So what's going to happen after the transaction? Most of the shareholders of CBD are in Brazil. So the bulk of the shares that you will see will be traded in B3, which is in São Paulo. There will be roughly 20% of the shares which will wind up on New York Stock Exchange, and the remainder 7% will wind up in BVC, which is the Colombian Stock Exchange. These are fungible shares, that is to say, the Colombian shares can move to Brazil or vice versa, or you can make ADRs out of them and so on and so forth. So the liquidity of the Éxito shares is slated to increase massively and tremendously. The increased tradability and the ridiculously low valuation at which it currently trades, are going to change. The valuation is clearly, I think, something that will be affected by the increased liquidity of these shares. So where are we in the whole process? So last year, in Q3, the company talked about this. They announced the preliminary analysis of the transaction, the approval by the board of directors. That was done in September 2022. The Q4, they began the preparations for the transaction. The creditors, the approvals of the transaction, the approvals by the different exchanges for the ADR and the BDR listing, that is largely done. It was completed by the end of last year. Now, the final round of approval by GPA, the governance bodies, the regulators, the ADRs and the BDRs, it is currently in progress. The ideas of this transaction will be completed in Q2 2023. Okay, so that's where we are in the process, and this transaction separating out Éxito, in listing these shares, post-split shares on the different markets, be it Colombia, be it Brazil, be it the New York Stock Exchange, you're certainly going to see an increase in the availability and tradability of these shares. So where are we in terms of our conclusions about this? So, you know, the investment opportunity in CBD, in my opinion, arises from a number of sources. I believe it's a result of perceived lower growth profile that CBD was showing after the 2021 spinoff of its high growth cash and carry business in the form of Asahi, then selling some of its businesses to Asahi. So, of course, everybody believed CBD had gone X growth. Now, again, a big part of the valuation, as we saw earlier, was Éxito. And both Colombia and Brazil, I mean, there's some degrees of concern about the challenging macroeconomic and political environment in both those countries. Again, this is not an there's then the matter of corporate complexity. It is, you know, if you parse it and you have, you know, the chart that I showed at the beginning, ultimately, this is a very simple company. But as one looks at it in the reported information, it's actually a big mass. It's a much more of a bundle of companies which reports in the aggregate without the simple splitting into the constituent pieces. So organizational complexity of this thing is something that obviously concerns people. It operates in a number of different countries, five different countries, there are three different entities. And so, you know, it operates in a variety of things. There's obviously retailing, primary food retail, but there's also a whole bunch of e-commerce, which is listed in France. So it's a totally confusing thing for a lot of people. And then, of course, as I mentioned, there's this limited public float of Éxito and Cnova. Those are depressed and basically nobody cares. Nobody cares about those things. But that's about the change. As I mentioned, Éxito, the single largest component of that, is going to be coming public. I mean, they're going to be distributing the shares. Remember, and I mentioned earlier, that in late 2021, they tried to distribute the shares of Cnova, relist them, and increase the float. Well, the market was not very receptive to that. So, of course, that flotation was basically shelved for a while. So CBD really, I think you'll probably see a couple of things happening here. In the first instance, you are going to get shares in Éxito, which I think is the big relevant transaction here. I think there's going to be a moment of major value realization that's about to happen. Again, keep the number in the back of your mind. We have here a market price here of a CBD of 1886. And the value of Éxito is about in the mid-20s, mid-high 20s, 25.96. So it's a very large chunk. It's a very large distribution that happens. There is a value crystallization transaction that is going to happen very shortly. And Q2 is not far away. We're already end of the first month. It's, let's say, 4 or 5 months away. So there we are. That sort of, in a nutshell, is the idea. Is CBD the entity which is listed in both New York as well as in Brazil? It will, within the course of the next 4 or 5 months, be distributing its holding in Éxito, which becomes highly tradable, highly liquid, and I would argue a deeply undervalued share. And that sort of is the nub of the recommendation here, the nub of this idea. Okay, it's a holding company that is actually doing something proactively to reduce its discount, not because of its own good intentions. It basically has to do it because the parent of the parent, namely the parent of Casino, which is the parent of CBD, needs the cash. And that's a sort of a kind of a forced coming public that's taking place here. And so with that, let me pause here, see if there are any questions, anything further that we'd like to explore about this.
Thank you so much, Amit, for the presentation. So just to make sure I understand correctly, are you saying that essentially for a cash outlay of 1886 Brazilian in a number of months, you can essentially sell Éxito shares for, let's say, 25 and then still own a couple other assets?
Everything we advocate is long-term investment. So when this Éxito shares come public, there's clearly going to be selling. selling because maybe the Brazilians don't want to own Colombian stock, and maybe Colombians want to buy it. So there's be buying and selling of Éxito shares that's going to take place. Okay, Éxito is the higher growth component of it's growing faster than GPA. The residual piece, the stub, post the Éxito dividend, is probably going to trade down. Okay, so these are the numbers that I've quoted. One is 1886 is the market value of the market price of CBD shares in Brazil at the close on Friday. The 2596 is my valuation by Morris, the Morris valuation of Éxito shares. It may or may not immediately attain that, but historically, it's not been, traded far. It's not far from where the kind of multiple that it's traded in the past. So with the passage of time, Éxito share price will probably reassert itself. And you'll probably have two pieces of paper which will, in aggregate, be worth more than the one piece of paper you started with. How much exactly that will be, I cannot tell you. Because remember, once there's a dividending out of the Éxito shares, the CBD price will fall. And then, of course, some of the Éxito, there'll be sellers in Éxito. As I said, the Brazilians may or may not want Éxito shares, and so on and so forth.
Understood. And so it sounds like you intend to hold everything for the long term. Is that correct?
Correct. I mean, to me, these are my prejudices. So let me explain why I'd like to own both of them. First, I think Éxito is an extraordinary company. It's a really, really great company. I've been following this company I've owned it a couple of times since 2004 when I first visited them. And I visited them many, many, many times. It's an extremely competent, very cost conscious. It's got a hammer lock. They actually operate with a long-term vision. And I don't want to say they're ruthless, but they're very good. They're very, very good at sort of planning their next steps. And then they execute extremely well. So that is definitely something. And Colombia is currently, I would argue, given the cloud overhanging it in form of the new government, there's a lot of people who have been afraid to buy there, which right in and as of itself presents an opportunity. I mean, you're getting effectively a Colombian icon. It's going to become part of the, the index, and on and on and on. So you will certainly see that a part of the pension fund holdings and so forth. I mean, it's an attractive company unto itself, irrespective of index considerations. Now, separately, CBD. CBD has raised cash by the sale of this Extra Hiper business to Assai, and has been reinvesting quite rapidly in its own business. The short term, you will not see the benefits of this investment in its own business. Gradually, longer term, basically what it's doing is following the Éxito model. All the fresh products for the big investment is taking place in Grupo Pão de Açúcar, which is the high-end food-related stores. And they are actually upgrading to have formats kind of like Éxito, both of them is the quality, the fresh baked goods, the fresh cut meats, the fresh vegetables, having a very high quality beverage section, as opposed to the cheap hooch that they used to sell, they've actually begun to sell all sorts of interesting sort of, shall we say, wines from other countries. And, for example, because it is related to casino, you're beginning to see all sorts of French products, French chocolates, French muesli, all sorts of products. So there's a huge, shall we say, going up market taking place at CBD, at GPA. Okay, so that investment. There's another thing sitting inside CBD that I've really not said much about, but I've alluded to, is the logical thing is for CNOVA itself to be monetized also in a manner analogous to, or another way, whatever other way. But the idea would be for CBD to spin off CNOVA or sell it or bring it public and so forth. So there could be further value realization coming, because CNOVA, as it is currently valued, makes no sense. I mean, again, makes sense if you understand that only 1% of it is listed, is tradable. And so, of course, there's virtually no trading, and the price discovery is non-existent. So you will see value crystallization taking place in the case of CBD, both from operational considerations, the building up of GPA's assets, and in the case of CNOA being monetized in some fashion, which I suspect that Casino would like to see happen as well. That would help further deleverage Casino's balance sheet and Rally's balance sheet as well. So the short answer to your question is, yes, I probably own both of them.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of the timeline here, could anything upset the apple cart, as it were?
Of course, of course. I mean, look, regulators could, you know, snitty about it and difficult. But so far, interestingly enough, the progress they've made. So in the US, we actually have an ADR existing, and what this would be, registration of additional ADR shares. So that process seems to be pretty much well on the way. The new one was the BDRs. To date, there are have been no BDRs in existence. Being permitted to have BDRs listed on B3, that process is largely done. It was largely done by the end of last year. And apparently they're making very good progress in terms of the legal approvals they need for this trading to start off Éxito once those shares are listed in B3 and the additional ADRs. Now, the other thing to note is for, I think, 60 days after the spinoff takes place, you will be permitted free exchange of your shares from one market to another. So, for example, we own the Brazilian shares. We will be getting BDRs. Conceivably, we might prefer to own the Colombian or ADRs. I mean, in my mind, we're registered to trade in all three of the markets, so we can certainly do that. But should I want to do that for whatever reason, I would certainly be able to do that for 60 days without a fee. After that, you know, the typical ADR conversion fees will start to apply. So, but that is conventional, so that's not a problem per se. But you'll certainly have the ability to trade them. The odds are, again, and this is my conjecture, that there will be a meaningful demand for Éxito shares by Colombian institutions and pension funds. Quite simply, because when it was taken over, it is one of the, I call it one of the iconic companies of Colombia that was taken over by a Brazilian company. And the float became so small, it was thrown out of the index and so on and so forth. Now what this is going to do, the process is going to start to reverse. We're going to have a somewhat more liquid share. It is going to be listed in a place from which you can buy it and convert it. And I suppose that process should be reasonably doable to execute. But I mean, I'm sure there's bureaucratic stuff you've got to do to take it from one market to the other. But that's the only sort of headache part of this investment that I can see.
And US-based investors can buy the shares today on the New York Stock Exchange and then receive Éxito shares traded on the NYSE as well.
Correct.
Is that right?
Correct. So in the US, you can buy CBD shares, and those shares will receive Éxito shares. Now, Éxito has had over the years, an ADR. But it's one of those sort of very low level of listing ADRs with a very limited liquidity. And now I think they're trying to upgrade that so that it will become available in the US. The ADR will be NYSE listed. Previously, the ADR was on the NASDAQ. So that's an upgrade. So you as a U.S. shareholder, if you're a U.S. shareholder who owns CBD, you will receive Éxito shares, which will be traded on the NYSE, and roughly 20%, which is a much more liquid kind of situation than existed in the past on the NASDAQ.
Right. So U.S. investors buying the shares today on the NYSE will not have to hold any paper traded outside the U.S.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And similarly, the Brazilians can continue on a Brazilian stock, for example.
Very interesting. Looking very long term here, what in your mind is the biggest risk to the business itself of Exito? Let's start with Exito, since it's the biggest piece, and maybe you can touch on the other two as well.
So what's perceived to be the biggest risk for most Latin American companies, the most Latin American securities, is country risk. Colombia's country risk shot up rapidly when in the run-up to this election and what had the outcome of the election. For the first time in its history, Colombia elected an openly left-wing government. Now, there's different shades, shall we say, of how left-wing people can be. I mean, Chile has had its own flirtation with the left-wing government, which is progressively sinking in popularity and ability to get its agenda implemented. So Chile is gradually drifting back to the old normal, which is very much a middle-class society with middle-class values and very centrist values politically. Colombia, historically, has been a much more capitalist country. I mean, I know lots more about Colombia than many other places in that continent. And it's always horrified people of my degree of engagement in Colombia. I find it in some ways sharing many more values with the US than any of the other countries on that continent. It's very American. I mean, it's very American in that sense. That said, the pandemic really hurt a lot of people. So to some degree, to the extent there's some degree of an attempt to even out income distribution, and depending on what measures are taken, if they're not foolish and they're not impractical ones, would actually be a reasonable bridge to presumably a return to what it used to be. Historically, it was unquestionably the values were very middle class. You work, save, send your kids to school, reinvest, and the next generation would do better. And the values are very much like that, very, very much like that. And so it's a very American sort of mindset. And so the risk is that something has really changed. There's a lot of the risk already embedded in valuations. You may remember this time last year, we spoke about a company called Suramericana. That opportunity was precipitated precisely because we had this government elected. There was a huge freak out and nobody wanted to buy Colombian securities generally. Nobody, certainly portfolio manager type. So most of the portfolio investors basically came, who were there, sold the shares and went away and decided to do nothing. To us, that seemed to be a great, great, great opportunity. The economy was rebounding very, very well. In fact, faster than many of the other countries in the region. And I would argue parenthetically, one of the reasons why it was rebounding was actually because of the large number of Venezuelan immigrants that came to the country. Remember, these are not just dependents. They're producers. They have no safety nets. They come, they work, and they consume. And they I don't want to say they turbocharge the recovery, but certainly the economy rebounded very, very nicely. And so the economy has been coming back quite nicely, but the pandemic was pretty tough on most of the society there. And remember, you had the Venezuelans coming at this time of the pandemic. It was just a horrible, horrible time, which is how this government got elected. It remains to be seen what sorts of changes. Remember, there's a limited range of things you can do. There is a budget. You have public debt. You have deficits to worry about. And you can't just wave a wand and say that I'm going to be an eco-friendly government and we're going to ban all oil and gas exploration or mineral exploration. We're going to become a green society living on tourism. The problem is that's just very hard to do in the short term. It will be done, I think, sensibly in the midterm. The reason why I say it's hard to do in the short term is more than 50% of Colombia's exports are oil and gas. They're also a large coal exporter. So not that these are the most salubrious and healthy of things, but that said, you can't just wave a wand and make all these things disappear. Your economy will implode. And that is what the government is finding out. It's just, it's easier to talk, sort of sell the story as a part of an election campaign, but it's going to be a much more difficult thing to actually implement. So we will see. I mean, the bark is worse than the bite and or vice versa. We shall see. I mean, that is a risk. That's a risk across all the different markets. In the case of Brazil, you've gone from a transition from I'm not sure who's more business friendly, so I don't dare use the word. The previous government, Bolsonaro's government, which was, I thought, quite erratic. In fact, they were spending more. They engaged deficit spending of a kind that I think even a leftist government would be proud of. Now, it remains to be seen whether Lula's government, which is supposedly left off the Bolsonaro government, will engage in spending. So political risk is ever present in all these places. The question is the degree to which it sort of surfaces. I mean, there are extreme cases in Latin America which cause people concern, aka Venezuela and Argentina. I mean, those are sort of off the charts, off the map. There are guardrails in these other countries. The history of these other countries may make it harder for countries such as, say, Colombia and Brazil to go gaga in the leftward direction. I mean, but as businesses, these are both very, very well-run businesses. They're very well-run businesses. Éxito in particular is a superb business. And remember, in the case of GPA, who's watching over them are the French. And the casino is a very sizable retailer. I mean, the knock on casino is that it's a wildly leveraged company. They're crazy. I mean, this is not a recommendation of buying casino. It's a recommendation to, shall we say, benefit from what casinos has to do to sort of salvage its own situation.
Since you bring it up, and I'm not asking for any thesis on casino, but it sounds like this transaction will improve casino's financial structure materially.
Yes, but it's still very leveraged and it has a very hungry. So a note about casino. So sitting on top of casino is a company called Rally. Rally has no operating businesses. It only owns a big slug of casino and it has a huge amount of debt, which is serviced by extracting cash from casino. Sitting on top of Rally itself is a company called Yuris. Yuris also extracts cash from Rally, and because Yuris itself is also very leveraged. So you have these cascade of holding companies. It arguably the monetization that Casino recently did, or is in the process of doing, with Asai, because Casino also owns Asai, which was spun off from CBD. It owns Asai. It's selling $500 million worth of Asai. And so that will help reduce its own leveraging. This transaction of Éxito will, in time, once Éxito is a price they consider worthy of selling, will also proceed to deleverage a casino further. The problem, however, is casino deleverages to a point, but a lot of the cash they're realizing is going to be upstreamed to Rally and to Yuris and Yuris Financiere on top. I mean, this is like a crazy pyramid. It's a highly leveraged pyramid. And now, so there's not a whole lot. I mean, it is arguable that casino is cheap. I mean, it trades at a number. I think arithmetically it does look cheap, but is it? I mean, somehow I'm of the sort of timid school of investing. I try to avoid companies that are leveraged, because bad things can happen. If you don't have assets to sell, or you can't sell assets in time, you could be in deep trouble. And hence, my approach is to avoiding casino and everything above it, which is even worse. So that's just, this is me. To my level of risk aversion, casino probably is not a company that appeals. I mean, certainly I would not be engaged, being fiduciarily responsible, buying something like that, you know, and representing to people that it was a safe investment.
Right, right.
So, I mean...
Wonderful. Well, Amit, I will leave it there. I just encourage MY Global members to feel free to follow up with any further thoughts or questions. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing this very interesting investment thesis with the MY Global community.
John, thank you very much. And thank you, everybody, for listening to me patiently. And thanks again. I much appreciate it.
Goodbye for now.
Bye-bye.